Welcome to Healthcare is Hard, a podcast for insiders. Each episode, LRB Health's Keith Viglioli will talk to the healthcare insiders who are helping to fundamentally transform our healthcare industry.
Hey everyone, this is Tom Salemi. Welcome to Healthcare is Hard, a podcast for insiders. I am here with our host, Keith Viglioli of LRV Health. Keith Viglioli, how are you?
Tom, I am good. It is a gorgeous October morning. It felt like August yesterday around here.
Oh, I know.
Maybe there is some upside on global warming for New Englanders, which is, you know, you get to experience summer in October.
Very true. Very true. We also get to experience Red Sox baseball in October. We're sandwiched, not to put a shelf life on this podcast, but we're sandwiched in between the division series and the championship series that starts on Friday. So exciting times.
It is. We've got a running bet with one of our investors on the West Coast who would get farther, the Dodgers or the Red Sox. So the fact that the Dodgers got into pushing to game five, is it'll be fun to watch.
You had a bet like that before, didn't you, with a Dodger person?
We do it all the time. It's fantastic. he's a and we've won every bet, which is even better. We haven't lost yet. So, but all in all, very good.
We'll find out. I'll be rooting for the Giants. I'd like to see a Yastrzemski back in Fenway. So that would be a ton of fun. We're here to talk about CVS Health. You had a chance to speak with Josh Flum. He's the Executive Vice President and Head of Strategy and Business Development for CVS Health. And this is the second part of the retail series. Tell us what sort of led you to focus on retail. First, broadly about the series, and then let's find out what you learned from your conversation with Josh Flum.
We've been doing this long enough now, as you know, because you've been with me all along, that we've been getting a lot of feedback from folks, which has been great. And, you know, the more people give us feedback, the better off we can hone in on some of the guests that actually matter to folks and the areas of the space. And so we got some feedback a while back to talk a little bit about the retail side and sort of the retail potential disruptors called the Walmart, CVS, Walgreens, even Dollar General, others that are getting into the game. And so we figured, you know, let's grab a couple of executives from that angle. We've talked about this potential disruptor in the market with a lot of healthcare system and payer executives, but we haven't gone right to the source and said, hey, what are you really doing? And so we chose to do that. And we added and talked to Kevin from Walgreens on the last episode. And then we were lucky enough to talk with Josh this past week as well from CVS. And Josh is really interesting guy, as people will find out from this podcast. And he's really been at the heart of this company since 2004, but even going back to kind of 2001 when he was at BCG on the consulting side and CVS was one of his clients. So he's really seen it from the inside out, from CVS going from CVS to CVS Health. And so it was a really fascinating interview with him. And then we hope we're working on it to try to get the last big player, potentially Walmart, as the next interview. And so I think in three quick episodes of, let's call it 35 to 40 minutes each, someone can get a real glimpse from three senior executives at the largest, what I'll call retail disruptors. And I just think that's a fascinating listen for folks.
Interesting. And it's easy to see someone like Josh Flum sort of coming in from the business side and sort of maybe not being part of CVS's core, but you told me off before we pushed record that he was in charge of their pharmacy operations at CVS for a time. So he really knows the nuts and bolts of how CVS works, or at least their primary business.
Yeah, he tells a great story about being the last person standing in a room for BCG when he was there working on behalf of CVS, of drawing the short straw of having to go live for two straight weeks in the CVS pharmacy to really understand what it was all about, where the issues were, what the customer experience were. And it was really, I thought it was pretty cool. Like, you know, obviously we know that a lot of consultants do that type of stuff all the time. But again, I think he's got a real differentiated insight and understanding of the pharmacy landscape because he owned the pharmacy operations and the pharmacy component of CVS businesses for so long when he first got there, that he's a great person to talk to, you know, a topic that we've been thinking about for a while, which we call next generation pharmacy. Where are the problem areas? Where are the opportunities in pharmacy? And how important pharmacy is. I think he hits on this. We've been talking about this for a while, but he really hits on this, which is if you start thinking about the most important vector of a lot of health management, pharmacy is like smack dab in the middle of that. med adherence, med management, right meds, all the different things that keep people sort of on their protocol. Who better than, say, your local pharmacist to be in the middle of all that medication management? I thought that part of the discussion was really, really fascinating.
No, that makes perfect sense. You know, it sort of moved those kind of healthcare management duties out of the doctor's office a bit, so maybe it's a little more accessible. So one thing you talked about was that they have a venture fund. I wasn't aware of that. Tell us a little bit about that. And how do you like co-investing with entities like CVS Health? I don't know if you've done a deal with them at all, but what do you think of their having venture funds moving into this space?
Yeah, we haven't done a deal with them yet, but we interact with them a lot. So I'd say we probably interact with them quarterly. And we really enjoy the interaction because it's a different side of the industry. And you can keep pace on what matters for them. And, you know, we have a lot of investors that are very large healthcare systems and very large healthcare payers. And I think understanding all those different views are really important to figure out how to best sort of allocate capital in a very disruptive environment. And they launched I think it's a $100 million venture fund back in April of last year. And actually of this year, sorry. And they're just getting started. So I think they just announced their first deal, Oshi Health, this past week, actually, which is a specialty care GI player. They're, you know, as he says, by the time this probably would be broadcast or published, a couple of their early deals and their first set of deals would actually be announced. And literally yesterday, one was announced.
Well, great. Well, I don't want to take any more time away from this conversation. So now let's begin your talk with Josh Flum, Executive Vice President and Head of Strategy and Business Development at CVS Health.
Well, welcome back, everybody. We're excited to have a continuation of sort of what I call our retail series here with Healthcare is Hard podcast. And could not be more excited to have Josh Flum, who's the EVP, Chief Strategy and Business Development Officer of CVS Health. So Josh, we're excited that you agreed to sort of join us today and excited to get a discussion going.
Yeah, thanks, Keith. Pleasure to be here and look forward to our conversation.
Great. Well, I always start with these backgrounds, and I think people have come accustomed to them now. As I dug into your background, I got fairly intrigued. So this will be a good one, not to put pressure on you, but I'd love to understand sort of, you know, how you got involved with CVS and sort of your background. And, you know, you got some interesting sort of foundational backgrounds too that are interesting to your role on the business development side. And I'd love to just sort of hear a little bit about sort of your journey into where you are now.
Oh, thanks, Keith. Yeah, I do get asked this a lot, you know, when people look at my background, and the place most people start is, you know, you were a lawyer, and how did a lawyer make the journey, you know, from law into where you are now in business? So, you know, if I step back from that without going back too far, you know, I did love law school. It was a wonderful place for me, both in terms of education as well as just the people that I met, probably the most interesting and kind of eclectic set of people or classmates that I've had. When I came out of law school, I fully intended to practice law. I clerked for a year on the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, had a wonderful boss there and an incredible experience there. Went to a white-collar criminal defense firm in Washington, D.C. After that, a boutique firm called Miller, Cassidy, LaRocca, and Lewin. And again, great set of people and a very, very interesting practice. At that time, not many of the big firms were doing kind of white collar criminal defense or the independent counsel, sort of political representation was very specialized. That's somewhat changed now, as most of the big firms have realized it's an extension of their corporate practice and hired US attorneys and former US attorneys and sort of moved more broadly here. So it was a very interesting boutique firm and I enjoyed it, but I had sort of two things that came to me maybe 2 years into it. The first was when you do litigation, people come to you with a problem, and then as you begin to work on that problem with them, you become the problem. They want you to, they're frustrated with you, and you're thinking, well, I didn't create the situation, I'm trying to help. So that was part of it. But the other part of it was the role of the litigation attorney at times, though very interesting, is to return the world back to its status quo, get things to where they were previously. Right? That's the outcome that you're looking for. And for me, I realized that I really wanted to be able to have a broader impact, be able to do more, affect larger change. And this wasn't the place where I could do that. So as I stepped back, I thought whatever the epiphany I had, it could have been government service, could have been a lot of things, was that I wanted to get into business. I did not want to go back to school. I wanted to try to learn about business while getting paid. I'd been in school for a long time. So I remembered the consulting firms had come to campus, and I reached out and applied it to the large consulting firms, BCG and McKinsey. I was fortunate enough to start at BCG. When I was at BCG, again, wonderful education, wonderful learning, great group of people, took me to CVS. CVS was a client. And what we were doing at CVS at that time, and this is 2001, was Tom Ryan, who was the CEO, was asking, we've been a very successful regional pharmacy and convenience chain, but what do we need to do in the future? What is the next leg of growth for CVS? And at least the way I interpreted that question, Keith, was retail has no right to exist. So the brand that my parents knew, Sears, Woolworths, others, right? I knew them somewhat, but not in the way at all, right, that my parents did. And there are brands like Circuit City, an example, that I know that my kids will never know. So when you're that close to the customer, if you don't read where the world is going, you don't have a right to exist. So what was the next leg for CVS? Coming out of that, we focused in a few areas, and one that seems very obvious in hindsight, but I think at the time was very forward thinking, was we were going to really focus in then CVS at pharmacy, right? Really look at where the world was going, the opportunity within pharmacy, what we called at the time the back of the store, right? And there was significant opportunity for growth there, but a lot of things that we had to get right. And, you know, without going too long into it, this is the moment where my career really changed and took off. I would say I picture one moment in my mind when I think about it, which is in between the strategy case and then moving into some specifics, right? And one was pharmacy, and that was the one I was going to work on. We were what's called on the beach. So we had about 2 weeks off in between. And when you're a consultant, this is the time where you can leave and go and do things, right? Vacation with your family, et cetera, right before you start. We were in a room and the head of the office was talking to the team, and he said, what we need to do is someone's got to live in these pharmacies. Somebody's got to understand everything that happens, how they work, what's the workflow, what do you need to change, what's going on with the people, with the staff, what's next? And we went around the room and he said, you know, are you going on vacation? And somebody said, yeah, I'm going with my family. And I was last in this around the room. And all the time I was thinking to myself, God, I wish I was going on vacation. And I was not going on vacation. I was just planning to stay home with my wife. And she would tell you this is a trend of my not planning vacations. So in any case, I'm thinking to myself, somebody just say that they're not going on vacation before it gets to me. But nobody did. And it got to me. And I said, listen, I'm not going anywhere, but perfect. You're the one. So I went and lived in these pharmacies for 2 weeks. And after that, our head of stores, who then became our CEO, Larry Merlo, came down. John Roberts, who's our COO, came down, and we were talking about what was going on in the pharmacy and next steps. And they said, here's what happens. And I kind of said, well, that's not what happens. It takes this amount of time. The prescription comes in. They put it into the MDWCB box. Doctor will call back. They wait, but 16% of the time there's a problem. And then they all stop to do this. And it was from there I moved into that pharmacy case and revamping our pharmacy service, came in-house, ultimately worked on our pharmacy systems, ultimately ran our pharmacy business, and then moved through that into strategy, broader healthcare space within CVS. And so CVS grew, my roles evolved and changed, and built a wonderful career out of it. But the short answer to your question, I guess, would have been serendipitous in a way, like I think most careers are, but one that has brought me to some really interesting spaces and opportunities.
And so just a real quick one on that, just because I know so many lawyers that are not lawyers, do you think your legal background sort of has helped you through the years? Like, so a lot of people that are out there listening that, you know, might have legal backgrounds and are thinking about business careers, do you think that grounding and that education sort of helped you through some of that?
You know, it's a good question. I get asked a lot, you know, do you regret having gone to law school, or how has law school helped you in your career? And I would say, first off, obviously, I told you I was at a law firm in D.C. And one of the people that I met there was my wife. So I obviously don't regret it at all, just for that simple reason alone. But I would say, yes, it's been a great experience and education for me in a few ways. So the first is that there is a massive intersection of healthcare, law, public policy, right? So it is an industry probably that has those connections as much as any. So understanding those and how those pieces work and fit together has been very helpful for me. The other thing I'd say about the education is I remember well a conversation I had with Joe Davis, who at the time was running the office that I worked in for BCG and subsequently became, I believe until very recently, the head of North America or the Americas more broadly, I think, for BCG. And he said to me, you know, I really like the lawyers that we hire. And the reason is that when I ask a question to the MBAs, even if they don't know the answer, they just give me an answer. And when I ask that question to the lawyers, if they don't know it, they say, I don't know it, but let me go look into it. And then they read everything about it. They talk to people about it. And then they come back and they have an answer around it. And so I think that skill set of how you look at a problem, how you try to find the connection points, see the logical thread, right? Step back where you're not always a subject matter expert, but be facile and curious to learn. I think that skill set was developed further for me in law school. And that's been very critical for me in my career. So
Yeah,
education and background for healthcare, I think, or any or many business jobs.
Yeah, that's it's actually the first time I've heard someone explain the law background that way and the mindset that way. And I think that's invaluable for, to your point, especially in healthcare, given the depth and the complexity of the issues that we deal with day in, day out. So that's interesting. When you, well, the other question I have in your background, and we jump into it, is like when you think back to 01 at BCG, and then you think back to 04, I think you started at CVS, sort of in the full-time role, you know, did you ever in your wildest dreams think that the company would come this far into health?
You know, I'd love to say to you that I, you know, I saw it all and, you know, and saw the blueprint, but of course no one, I think no one saw all the pieces. It's such a fascinating story. It's such a unique story over that period of time. But, you know, but when I reflect on it, I guess what I would say to you, Keith, is I did see what I would call the raw material that fueled that evolution. And that raw material was in large part what attracted me to CVS. So what I mean by that is I saw a company with real potential to grow, very well positioned in pharmacy, and by extension, the opportunity to move further into healthcare. I saw a company and a leadership team that was willing to be bold and innovative, meaning asking what could be different, what is the broader role that we could play. I saw a company that I thought could really execute and deliver, meaning could focus and then get things done. And, you know, one of the things that I believe, I don't think I'm unique in this, but the way I've often thought about it is to really have a reach what I would call the maximum potential in your career. You want to be working in A, the right industry, right? A place with opportunity for growth. The example I use a lot of times, and I don't mean to offend anybody with it, is if I were working in office goods, right, in the same time my career, there would be less room for innovation and growth, just given the nature, right? So we were in a good space. And then you want to be in a company that's willing to invest to lead and to innovate, but that also has a scarcity and a bottom line focus. So you learn to operate, right, needing to deliver value and return. And I saw those things in CVS. And then I would say, well, I couldn't see the specific moves. I did see that opportunity for growth. And then I think along the way, I was fortunate to have a seat at the table in some of those moves as we moved further into pharmacy healthcare with Caremark, as we moved further into care delivery and accessible care delivery with MinuteClinic, as we move further up the stack into the health plan space to think about how we could really bring together our assets to change behavior and deliver more consumer-centric care with Aetna. So I've been a part of that, and it's been a wonderful career. I didn't see all of it, but I didn't think this was just going to be a regional pharmacy chain for the next 10 or 15 years. If I thought that, Keith, I don't think that I would have, you know, joined from where I started, but it has exceeded even my expectations of what we could be and the role that we could play.
Yeah. And it's fascinating. It's one of those, you know, like you, I've been in this space a long time. I've also held corporate development roles in past lives and done war games and thought about like competitive threats. And I got to tell you, like back in the day in those roles, like before you guys made a lot of moves, like CVS was never on my radar. Like I never thought about it, but the immediate time, you know, the name change, the MinuteClinic, some of the things, like, it was one of those classic moments where you're like, yeah, that's a no-brainer. Like, how would we not all see that?
Yeah,
so it was just fascinating.
Yeah, Keith, you know, one of the things I would say is, you know, some of the best things that people do or moves or even strategic moves, they say, always look obvious in hindsight, right? Yeah. It's always like, of course you did that. That makes perfect sense. But in the moment, those are oftentimes big leaps, right? They're oftentimes big and bold and innovative moves. And I think in hindsight, they look logical. And I would say that's very true here. When you look at the evolution and step back from the company, it all sort of seems like it was just a master plan, but it was a series of moves, but I think with a view in mind of what we could be and the nature of the bigger role that we could play and a leadership team that was always thinking around and looking around corners.
Yeah, makes sense. Let's put a pin in a little bit the broader strategy because I want to come back to it tied into the landscape, but I do want to dig into other part of your background on the pharmacy side. You know, we've been doing at our firm with our strategic partners a tremendous amount of what I'll call research work as a way to what we call next generation pharmacy. And, you know, thinking about pharmacy, everybody is impacted with what's going on in pharmacy. And so you've had so many roles on the pharmacy operations side today. I mean, how do you, and, you know, we've had so much movement along with yourselves and some of the bigger, you know, PBM plays. How do you think about the pharmacy landscape today, given the long lens that you have? And like, you know, how do you think about sort of how the world's working today in pharmacy, given all the things that are going on there?
Yeah, you know, as you know, right, pharmacy is, you know, in my DNA, sort of how I came into CVS and into healthcare. And I would say I am, and long have been, a very strong proponent of the value of pharmacy, right? And the criticality of the role of the pharmacist, but beyond the pharmacist, that entire kind of pharmacy team, right? Yeah. And the role that they play in people's lives. It is the most frequent interaction in healthcare, right? And a lot of healthcare happens in between other, you know, doctor visits and, right? So the pharmacist is really there. They see you all the time. They know you. They know your family, right? And I would say at the base of it, medication is also, right, a very critical part of keeping people healthy, right? So how do you help people get on and stay on, right, the right medications? Now, what I would also say is during my time in pharmacy, I've seen some really fundamental shifts. So when I started in pharmacy, pharmacy was largely around that individual relationship, but also fulfillment, right? Getting people their medications, right? And there were major fundamental shifts underway there from cash pay into insured pay and others, right? So, but it was about the medication. It moved during the time that I was in pharmacy very much to clinical pharmacy care, right? So how do you actually help people stay adherent to their medications? How do you help them close gaps in care, but around pharmacy? And then it broadened, right, beyond pharmacy and into other aspects of medical care. So you've seen immunizations, right, inside of pharmacy. You've seen broader medical conversations and pharmacists practicing at the top of their license. So that, I think, is the next evolution in pharmacy, is balancing the physical plant, right, with all of these clinical care and interventions, and how you bring technology to bear in that, how you leverage those consumer relationships around pharmacy to drive broader healthcare. And that's a big part of the journey that we're on. What I would say, Keith, that is important, and this ties back maybe to your earlier question, is I think one of the great things about CVS in this space is that when I'm at a dinner party, for example, and somebody asks me where I work, and I tell them CVS, and if the conversation progresses further from there about CVS, people are often quite shocked by all of the different things that we do, right? By the role we play in healthcare, by the fact that we're a Fortune 5 company, right? And why are they? Because they think of us as, wait a second, you're, right, that pharmacy, you're the ones that help my kids, you're the people that are helping me, you're this person. I don't realize quite how big you are. And think about in healthcare, that space. Yeah. Right. And how many people in healthcare would love to have that connection and that closeness to the consumer that we have? And I think in many ways that starts with pharmacy, and pharmacy will always be central to the relationship that we have, right, with the broader healthcare system.
That's a great point, and kind of plays right into my next question, which is,
first of all, 100% agree with you. You know, the whole meds and management, the clinical pharmacy side, I think is elevated to a place now when you start thinking about risk contracting, ongoing management of patients, and the importance of that. You know, we have talked a lot with a lot of guests and a lot of CEOs and other senior executives and healthcare systems and payers on this podcast about sort of what I'll coin is the, you know, won't be this, but coin it as the retail threat. And we had Dr. Kevin Bond on last time from Walgreens as well, talking about this. So I have to ask the same question to you, which is, you know, how should the incumbent kind of healthcare delivery players think about sort of not just CVS, but Walmart, Walgreens? You probably saw the note that, you know, even Dr. General wants to kind of play, Dollar General wants to play in this game too. And so logically, given their footprint, how should people think about that? And I guess the follow-on to that also is like, you know, is it a threat or is there differentiated partnership opportunities out in the market as well?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, one of the things that the way I would think about it, you know, if you let me step back for a second, is I don't know if I would say threat or opportunity, right, with retail health. I would say the question that people in healthcare need to ask is, right, where do I fit with the broader trends, right, that are occurring now in healthcare? How do I fit into those? I think that's the broader question. And so, at least to me, and I do want to come back to your questions, your related question to that. So, but for me, what I would say is when I step back, at least I'd say there are a number of market forces at work in healthcare that are coming together, accelerated, right, by COVID, that are going to shape where healthcare goes, I think, in the future. And so, I see a couple of them. The first one that I see a lot of people talk about, but I think is becoming more and more real, is this patient as a consumer, right? So there are new expectations emerging, right, around the way people access, receive, and finance their care, right? So people are moving now into healthcare. They're delivering solutions with a consumer-first mindset in a system that's historically been built much more around the provider, right? So we provide those kinds of solutions, as do other digital healthcare companies and incumbents. And so I think what happens there is as people experience more what I would call these patient as consumer or consumer-first health solutions, the water level rises for everyone, right? Because people start to demand a healthcare experience that's more seamless and personalized in an industry where I think actually poor customer experience has been a kind of long accepted norm. The other, I think, macro trend in healthcare is the policy, the regulatory environment are supporting shifts from institutional settings to what I would call community, home, and virtual settings to help reduce patient costs and complexity. So I think that's a long range trend in healthcare. The third big trend, I think, is that you've seen this massive influx of technology investment, and that's leading to actually the meaningful application and adoption of technology in healthcare. So you're seeing new digital platforms, right, that empower consumers to actually directly manage their health. You're seeing things like AI and predictive insights actually demonstrating cost and clinical impact. And you're seeing meaningful opportunity to increase the efficiency and effectiveness and reduce the cost in a healthcare industry that, right, long had old core systems and a lot of technical debt. And one thing we can talk about is I think all those trends start to come together in a lot of innovation around care delivery in particular, right? And technology-enabled care delivery, the intersection of the payer and the provider to manage risk. And I'm sure you've seen these, Keith, a lot of hybrid models, home, virtual, community, shift from a transactional model of healthcare where somebody or a doctor treats, right, a specific condition to holistic models enabled by care teams, right, that try to assess all of a patient's needs and develop a plan to address them, right, and a focus on higher cost patients and taking a risk on the total cost of care. So I think it's really the question you have to ask is, where do you stand relative to those trends is the broader question to ask. We feel very well positioned to play a big role in the future of healthcare as those trends continue to evolve. We have the strong brand that consumers trust. We have community and home-based assets. We have digital properties that are among the most used in healthcare. We know our customers. We can deliver personalized and proactive care. But we have more to do to connect the dots across all of that, right? For the most important moments in a consumer's health journey. And certainly, we need to work in concert with and in partnership with the broader system to be able to make the kind of change, you know, that's necessary. So yeah. A relatively long answer, but I think just a frame of how at least I kind of step back and think about that question.
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense. And you know, there's obviously, in my opinion, for the retail players, there's obviously an acuity cap at some point, right? In terms of how far up the stack you're really going to go, and the incumbent players, you know, how far are they going to come back? And I think it's the balancing of those two things. And the question becomes is, if you believe in the kind of primary care model, or you believe in the care navigation model in time, you know, could that really start with a retailer? Like, so could I call CVS my, you know, primary medical home, if you will, at some point in time, as the main sort of interesting, as you know, navigation is still broken in this country in terms of how patients sort of manage through certain conditions. Could that ultimately become a CVS, a Walgreens, a Walmart in your community? Back to your point about the brands that I trust with my meds. So then why don't I also trust them for other aspects of my health?
Yeah, I think that is true. And honestly, you know, we've seen that trend over time, right? As I talked about, we see people more and more trust pharmacy as it relates to immunizations. COVID, certainly, we've seen them, right, as it relates to testing, as it relates to vaccinations, as it relates to boosters. So that really convenient but trusted healthcare service in the community, right? And we've seen that with our MinuteClinics, I think is becoming and able to play a more central role in, you know, in sort of the consumer healthcare journey. So I think you're right there. You know, one thing I often step back on, and this ties back to the role in ventures, which I think we'll discuss later, right, is the flip side, right, of care becoming a little bit easier and more ubiquitous, is that could actually, frankly, become overwhelming, right? Yes. Which is, where do I start? How do I access all of that? So in my role, I see a lot of innovation, incredible innovation happening. But I often think, how would I, as a consumer, not as a head of CVS Ventures, how would I know about all of this? I have a busy life. I have a lot of competing demands going on in my life. And so I think, where would you start? You start with, if you were a consumer, people you trust, right? You'd start with people you know that can help you navigate this experience, companies that are in my day-to-day life, right? And so I think that gives us an opportunity to be proactive in helping people to manage their care. So I think you are right that there is no reason it can't start in many instances with retail health, or that can't be a great connector as you bring together the pieces and parts of the system. So I think a very reasonable question.
And I think that's your point about, we have a central thesis for our next fund cycle, which is called Care Anywhere. And it's right down the middle of what you're talking about. So you can pick up your phone with your, you know, Aetna's got a telehealth. I could pick up certain aspects of my provider's got telehealth. Others, you're going to be able to actually literally get care anywhere. You can go down to MinuteClinic. You can go down to Walmart. You can go down anywhere. Now, the quotient in time, I believe, is going to be quality. Like, what level of quality are you going to get in certain interactions? And I think that's going to be the next sort of wave of sort of consumer acknowledgement once some of this shift takes place. But I'd be curious some of your perspective on that as well.
A couple of things, I think. You know, first off, I do think the care everywhere theme is, you know, is a real one. You are seeing, you know, from a care delivery system that from a patient perspective, right, can often be inconvenient or expensive, confusing, hard to access. You are seeing a lot of shifting models of that, as you said, across sort of home, virtual, community. I think one insight in that that's helpful is I don't think people want one or the other. They want a different one at different times based on their need set. Sometimes I just need it really convenient. I'd like to do this through telehealth and have a prescription delivered to my house. Other times I need to talk to somebody. I want to stop in, right? I want to go into a store, right? So I think it is ubiquitous, but it's also being able to choose those in the ways that work best. So I think we're well positioned in that, but I think that's a place that the world is going. And I think you're right. It's not just anyone that can play in these spaces. I think it is someone that the consumer trusts to have, right, and be making the right investments in quality, right, as well as convenience, as well as clinical care. And it has to be all of those things, I think, over time, right, within those models. So I think that's a very good insight there as well.
So the next phase of this is where you start thinking about the labor side of it and all the different folks that are sort of fighting for clinician labor. You know, like how do you, you know, clinical labor, like how, you know, CVS is a huge player in that, I think, in time. And so that's just another issue I'd be curious your perspective on.
Yeah, thanks, Keith. I do think that at the end of the day, a lot of what we want to do in healthcare and what everyone wants to do in healthcare really is centered on, as you said, having the right people on the front lines interacting right with the consumer. And for us, that ranges from our pharmacists and our pharmacy techs to our nurse practitioners and MinuteClinic, our quorum nurses that are in the home. And so we have been very thoughtful long term around our people. And certainly in this moment in time, those are even more challenging than they have been historically, just given all of the increasing demand within healthcare. So we have stepped back and we've thought about ensuring, and I think you've seen news on this recently, the right wages, the right value proposition, the right purpose and role for our clinical talent, and the right focus kind of always on hiring and sourcing for the best talent in healthcare, both, I think, in an ongoing state, but also there have been some big spikes over the last year as you think about things like vaccination and testing. So this is, I would say, one of the areas where as a leadership team, we spend a tremendous amount of time because all of the other things that we talk about can't happen, yeah, right? Unless we get the people side of the equation right. So it is an area of ongoing and you know, consistent focus for us, and long has been since I've been at CVS.
Great. Well, let's finish up sort of focusing more on the innovation side to the point you brought up, and specifically talk about, I think, you know, you all, most people may know or may not know that you recently announced your own venture capital, $100 million venture capital effort. Obviously, you've been in the innovation game for a long time. I'm curious sort of how that came about, the focus and the thinking about doing the fund.
Yeah, so we launched the fund in April of this year, and so proud of the progress to date, but I would say early innings, right? And why we did it, right? It's a little bit ties back to some of the conversation that we had earlier, right? The healthcare environment is dynamic and, you know, rapidly, right, evolving. So no view of the world around you can be set in stone. So we need to be at CVS Health, right, deeply connected to the external environment, able to look around corners, open to seeing disruption before it occurs. And I think CVS Health Ventures is a big part of that insight and innovation kind of ecosystem that we're building, right? It helps to support what I would call an always-on insight return, as well as the opportunity, right, to understand where there are opportunities for partnership and commercial arrangements and different ways of advancing our strategy and also helping to advance systemic change in healthcare that we see as needed. The reason why we thought we needed a dedicated fund is that's a full-time job, I just described to you. And I think we had been doing investing, but a little bit more side of the desk. And we felt like we really wanted to have dedicated capital, have a professional team, help be able to move quickly and be a great partner, right, to the digital health players that are emerging. And to do that, we felt we had to step back and actually create the structure to be able to be really good at this as we go forward.
And is there sort of is it opportunistic? Is there some focus areas? You know, how should entrepreneurs think about the fund and talking to you all? Just curious for some of the listeners.
Yeah. So we do have kind of thesis-driven, I would say, investment strategy focused on a few areas, right, connected to our broader strategy as a company. So given some of the dialogue that we've had today, these areas may not surprise you, Keith, but we have care delivery is one, right, a focus on innovative technology-driven models. I would say consumer-centric healthcare is another. How consumers are making health decisions, shopping for, and directing their care. Whole person care, so treating beyond the specific condition, but the whole person, I would say a focus on a subset there within behavioral health a lot as an anchor. And then I would say the last theme, which underlies all of them, but is itself a theme, I think is really the disruptive technology enablement in healthcare. So not something that's just a modest advancement, but something where technology is really coming in and changing paradigms as it relates to healthcare is the other broad theme. And then you asked, how should entrepreneurs work with us? I would say, reach out to us, make contact with us. We're out in the market a lot, so we're in the deal flow, but reach out and talk with us. Every conversation, of course, doesn't lead to an investment, but it can start an understanding of each other, right? And it can allow us to continue that dialogue, both as a broad healthcare company that needs, as we said, to work with innovative partners across the ecosystem, and ultimately, potentially, right, as an investment partner.
Got it. And any public investments that you can disclose yet with the fund or?
Yeah, so we're closing now, Keith, on our first set of investments. I think probably two of them, I guess, would say will be public by the time, I guess, that this podcast is aired. And we have a few others that are very close and in the works. On the public side, we have one within behavioral health, a company called WorkIt, which is virtual medication-assisted treatment and a therapy platform for substance use disorder. We think they have a great model in an area of incredible need, right? You have over 50 million Americans living with a mental health issue and close to 24 million that need treatment for drug or alcohol abuse. And the existing model is inefficient. It's very expensive. We think that they've built a very meaningful model in a very critical and important space. Another one is in the virtual care space, a company called Oshi Health, and they're really working to improve GI care through a virtual first clinic that integrates medication, nutrition, right, and mental health support. And I think there it's interesting for us as we explore virtual care going beyond that, like acute virtual care, right, to something that's more holistic and comprehensive and ties in virtual specialty care. We think that's a very interesting model, and they're in a very interesting space there. So those are two that I think will be public. And then we have a few more that are in the works, aligned to the themes that we talked about earlier.
That's great. Well, this has been terrific. And Josh, I can't thank you enough. I know you're very busy, but any last thoughts before we close it out?
Thanks, Keith. I do think that, you know, at this point in time, you know, we're at a very interesting moment in healthcare, with significant change on the horizon. We're really look forward to the role that CVS Health can play. We think the venture fund is something that really helps us to connect even more deeply to the innovation ecosystem as it evolves. We know that we will need many partners to get there, and we're excited about what the future brings and building on some of the things that we were able to do in COVID as that relates to testing, as that relates to vaccinations, as we continue to bring healthcare centered around the consumer, closer to the community, and meet people where they are, you know, to solve for their healthcare needs.
Well, Josh, this has been great. I really enjoyed your insight and thoughts. You are in sort of the seat right now, in my opinion, to be able to see this in multiple spots. So I appreciate your time and thank you.
Well, that's a wrap. Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of Healthcare is Hard, a podcast for insiders. If you want to follow Keith Figlioli, he is on LinkedIn. You can find him there, Keith Figlioli. If you want to share this podcast, make sure you copy Keith and myself. We'd love to be part of that conversation. You can find me on LinkedIn as well, Tom Salemi. You can also find me on Twitter at MedTechTom. I'm the editorial director of the Device Talks events and podcast. So look at devicetalks.com if you're interested in the medical device field. That's it, folks. Tune in next time for another great episode of Healthcare is Hard, a podcast for insiders.